and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, July 6, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. I hope you all had a fantastic holiday weekend. I'm fresh back from an extended working vacation where I spent nearly 3 weeks visiting with family and friends in Washington, D.C. I got to tell you, we had a great time, but you know what vacation means. A bunch of stuff piles up, so today is especially busy. But I did return home to some awesome news. My blog, the Indie Business Blog, is ranked as one of the top small business blogs by BlogRank, a new system that ranks blogs in a variety of different categories. You know, it's a dynamic ranking, and although I'm in the top 100, I am at number 82, so I guess that means I have to get busy to maintain my status. Anyway, I'm really excited about that. Thank you, BlogRank, for including me. And you can check out the link in my Twitter stream today at twitter.com/indiebusiness. Well, speaking of blogs and other types of social media, our guest today is here to help us not only create a better blog and work social media in more efficient ways, but also to start what he calls our own worldwide rave. What is that? Well, I'm going to let him tell you. His name is David Meerman Scott, and he is an award-winning online marketing strategist, entrepreneur, keynote speaker, and seminar leader. He is the best-selling author of The New Rules of Marketing and PR and also the new book, Worldwide Rave. Dave joins us on Indie Business Radio today for the second time. He's going to be sharing how we can start our own worldwide rave, how to do it, and where to go to get started. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, David.
Hey, thanks, Donna Maria. It's great to be here again.
If you're listening to the show at indiebusinessradio.com, you can listen, of course, by just clicking on the link. If you're in the chat room, welcome. I'm excited to have you. You can post your comments and questions there. And you can also feel free to share some of the tips and insights that David is sharing at Twitter. And by the way, you can connect with David on Twitter at twitter.com/DMScott. We're using the hashtag IB09 for today's show. Well, David, I really am enjoying this book. It's really fun, and I love the stories that are in it. But I want to start by asking you, David, what is a worldwide rave?
So a worldwide rave is when people are talking about you online, or they're talking about your company or your products and services. And I think it's one of the most exciting forms of marketing there is, because it doesn't require that you're out there banging on people's doors or pushing things in front of people. But if you can create some excitement around what you're doing, people will talk about you, and they'll spread your ideas, and they'll tell your stories for you. And I call it a worldwide rave. Some people get a little bit hung up on the worldwide aspect. What I mean by that is your target market is talking about you. That could be, if you have a local business, that could be just in the town you lived in, so you can have a localized worldwide rave.
Oh, yeah, and I thought about that, too, the worldwide. It certainly makes it memorable. But can you focus on that just a little bit more? What do you mean by target market, and assure people that you don't have to have, you know, the entire world's attention to be successful in employing some of the things in your book?
Well, what I talk about a lot in all of my books and on my blog and whatnot is this concept that I call buyer personas. And a buyer persona is a group of people that you target that conceivably can do business with your organization. And I draw the distinction and the importance of buyer personas because I find that so many people and organizations focus instead on their stupid products. And I hate to be that way, but nobody really cares about your products and your services. And I know that sounds really tough for entrepreneurs to hear, but it's really true. What they care about, though, are their problems, and they care very deeply about solving those problems. So the primary job of a marketer or an entrepreneur who wears a marketing hat on occasion is to think about who are the people that you're trying to reach, and how can you create something compelling online that they'll find and that other people will share? Now, let me just draw back a second to this idea of buyer personas. One of the my favorite examples to describe it. I've got two interesting examples to describe the concept of buyer personas. The first one is that the person who buys your product may or may not be the person who actually uses the product. So for an example of that are tricycles. You know, a tricycle primarily is used by someone who's 2 or 3 years old, a preschooler. Yet a tricycle is purchased by parents, which is one buyer persona, and grandparents, which is another buyer persona. And those two buyer personas are actually quite different, because a parent wants to buy a tricycle, and they know the kid's growing fast, they're going to outgrow it really soon, just get a serviceable one, and they know they have to buy something else soon. However, the grandparents want to show all of their love for this wonderful child and spend a ton of money on their on this tricycle. So that's a real simplistic example of this idea of buyer personas. And a second example of buyer personas, which I think is a little bit more concrete to a lot of people, is hotels. And I travel a lot. I give speeches all over the world. I've been to over 40 hotels so far in 2009. And when I travel, I notice that practically every hotel website is exactly the same. And that's because hotel websites are built around the product. What is the product? It's hotel rooms and it's meeting rooms. But if you think about a hotel for a second from the perspective of buyer personas and the people that the hotel actually solves problems for, you can see that there's a bunch of different things that they can focus on besides just the product and service. For example, there's the independent business traveler who makes a decision of where they're going to travel and makes a decision on their own. Or there's the corporate travel department, which is another buyer persona, and they make a decision because they're having a couple of hundred different people throughout a year come through the corporate headquarters. Or maybe there's a corporate events department who's going to be planning events and need to have a place to do that, a hotel ballroom, or a young couple who's going to get married, a very different buyer persona, or a family on a vacation, another very, very different buyer persona. So if you think about your market from the perspective of these buyer personas, it literally transforms the way you do marketing, because instead of talking about your products and services and building websites and blogs and other types of online content about your products and services, you can create content that's specifically for your buyer personas. So getting back to that example of the hotel, imagine if they had a blog that was specifically designed for a young couple, young couples who are planning on getting married and using the hotel ballroom as a place to hold their wedding reception. And imagine if the blog focused on the top wedding bands in the local area and had links to the wedding band sites, reviews of those wedding bands, and perhaps even video clips of each of those wedding bands in action. All of a sudden, that becomes incredibly popular in the search engine rankings for the term wedding bands in that city, and it shows those buyer personas or the couple who's planning on getting married that this hotel understands me, and it's not just about the hotel's product. Long answer to a simple question, but
no, those are really good. Of course, as your book says, stories always make the point better than anything else, and you just told some good ones. So what you said points out, does it not, David, the importance of really making sure that you have a tight focus, that your plan tightly focuses on a particular market before you even start dealing with any of the kinds of social media things that we're going to be talking about.
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced that that's the correct first step. And in my experience, very, 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 very few people do that.
And that's why I wanted to raise it, because I think, and correct me, what do you think about this, that sometimes the frustration and overwhelm that people feel with different forms of social media comes from not having taken that first step?
Oh, there's no question at all about that. That's absolutely true. I've written a bunch of books. Imagine sitting down to write a book and not thinking ahead of time who you're writing it for.
Right.
And that's what people do when they start a blog or start a Twitter feed, without thinking of the people that they want that blog or that Twitter feed to target, or perhaps they go about making a YouTube video and they haven't thought about who they want that YouTube video to be targeting. What happens in this case And I see this literally every day. It's constant. What happens is, because people don't focus on who they're trying to target, they default to something they already know, which is what their product and service does. And unfortunately, that very rarely is successful, because people don't really care about skin cream. People don't really care about real estate services. People don't really care, using my example of earlier, about hotel rooms. And if you start a blog about hotel rooms, it's not going to be successful. If you start a blog about skin cream, it's not going to be successful. What's going to be successful, though, is thinking about the buyer personas that you're trying to reach. What are the problems that they face? And how can your product or service help to solve those problems?
Well, we've got a lot of great Indie Business Radio shows on the business planning process. So if you're listening out there and you think this may be sort of what's holding you back from starting your own worldwide rave, go to indiebusinessradio.com and check out some of those shows. So, David, let's assume we've got a good target market and we're focused and we're ready to go. What are some of the first things that you've seen people that you've worked with do to, you know, to jump off and get started on moving towards your worldwide rave?
Right. Okay. So, assuming that you've already got you've done some actual buyer persona research. And what I mean by that is you haven't just made stuff up in your nice comfortable office or your nice comfortable storefront, but instead you've actually gone out and interviewed representatives of your buyer personas to learn about who they are and what their problems are. Once you've done that step, then it becomes a matter of doing two things, in my opinion, fairly quickly. The first one is don't even write anything yet. Don't even create anything yet. But do a little bit of monitoring of other social media sites. So if you're thinking about possibly creating a blog, well, you ought to be checking out similar blogs to the one that you might be creating. And you probably want to do that for a couple of months before you even start your own blog. Similarly, if you're thinking about starting a Twitter feed, I would highly recommend that you use Twitter search, which the URL is just search.twitter.com, and enter some of the keywords that make sense for the buyer personas that you're trying to reach, and get a sense of what other people are tweeting about. Get a sense of how other people maybe like you, or maybe other people who are reaching the same buyer personas as you, what they're doing on Twitter. I just think it's really important to get a sense of what other people are saying before you jump in and start saying your own thing. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, don't automatically assume that what you're going to be doing is going to be text-based content. There's all kinds of different types of content out there that have successfully marketed people in the social media land. It could be text-based, and blogging and Twitter is text-based, but perhaps it's video-based, and you could do something on YouTube, or perhaps it's audio-based, which is what we're doing right now. Or perhaps you could create something that's an audio podcast of some sort. Perhaps it could be photographs. Perhaps the buyer personas that you're trying to reach and the way that you solve their problems is extremely well told visually through photographs. I'm thinking perhaps of a landscape architect could do some fantastic photographs that could help to get themselves out there into the marketplace. Or perhaps it's a chart or a graph or some kind of market data. And I'm thinking here of a real estate agent who does some price comparisons over the last 10 years about what's happened in housing prices in the local area, and can provide a research report that can deliver that information in a really compelling way. So I think that I see a lot of people automatically assume that when they're going to create something in social media, that what it's going to be is going to be a blog or a Twitter profile, and that might be perfectly fine. But it doesn't have to be that. I mean, a pretty cool example that I run across in the last couple of weeks is a real estate agent in the Fort Myers, Florida area. Fort Myers, Florida, there's lots of real estate on the market, and the prices have come down significantly, like a lot of areas, but prices have come down significantly in the last few years. And there's a lot of houses on the market, and a lot of these homes are very expensive. And this person was charged with promoting this particular property that was originally listed for $7 million. And they listed the home through the multiple listing services and made an advertisement in the newspapers and whatnot and had a website for the property, all good stuff. But then the owner, after the house had been on the market for some time, the owner came back to the real estate agent and said, hey, let's lower the price by $1 million. We're not having any takers. A lot of other properties on the market. Let's drop the price from $7 million to $6 million. And they got to talking about how they could do that in a clever way that would get people to spread that idea and share that story. So what they did was they created a $1 million off coupon.
Oh, wow.
And they put the $1 million off coupon in the newspaper. And they made a virtual version of the $1 million off coupon, put it on a website. And immediately, people started talking about it. They were on the front. This is in Fort Myers, Florida. They were on the front page, not the business section, but the front page of the daily newspaper in Fort Myers. They were on national television, Fox News, and some other national broadcasts. It's been a really interesting way to get themselves out there. And in their case, it wasn't a blog, it wasn't a Twitter feed. It was a simple $1 million off coupon for a piece of property that 999 out of a thousand people would have just lowered the price, and that would have been that.
That's such a great example. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk more with David Mirren Scott, author of The Worldwide Rave. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here today with David Mirren Scott, the author of Worldwide Rave. And one of the things David shared with us in the last segment was that if we have a blog or other social media tools that we're using, we don't have to rely just on text to get our message across. David, can you share a little bit more about that and how using videos and things that are not text-based help us with search engine rankings?
Oh, sure, absolutely. So anytime that you create something that's not text-based, and the main categories are really video, audio, and photographs. There's others, but those are the main ones. What you have to remember is that the search engines, Google and the other search engines, can't actually index the photographic, video, or audio content. So it's really important to create some companion text that's associated with that podcast or that video or that photograph. So the simplest example is if you create a YouTube video. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of YouTube video. It's free to make a YouTube video, really easy to do. I'm a big fan of what's called a flip video camera. FLIP. They cost about a little over $100, and they're incredibly easy to use. And there's no reason why everybody listening in on this call can't get a flip video camera, do some really, really simple interview format programs. Basically, maybe interview a customer, maybe interview a partner. You know, just get that camera, point it at yourself, say hello. I'm so and so. I'm at this company, and I'm here with my customer, and let's talk about what you're up to today. Do a 3 or 4 minute interview, and you can have it up onto YouTube literally within moments. Anyway, back to the question. It's important to make sure that the title of the video, the title that you use, is very descriptive of the content in the way that people might search for it. And then also inside of the YouTube video, there's a place, not the video itself, but the metadata, it's called, within the video that you put onto YouTube. You can have a one-paragraph description of what the video is about. Now, here's something pretty interesting, and not very many people have thought this through, but I have. Google owns YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And if you create a really good YouTube video with an incredibly descriptive title for the video that has, let's say you're a local business. I live in the Boston area. So let's say you're a Boston area real estate agent. You might want to use the keywords of, you know, Boston real estate in the actual title of a video that you're going to do. And then what happens if it starts to get a few views, the Google search engine will start to make that rank go up and up and up. And I've seen many videos that will end up being on the first page of the Google results. And what that does is it gets a small business person into the top natural search results for a particular phrase without actually having to make any text-based content or pay any search engine optimization fees. It's pretty amazing.
Do you have any tips, David, for helping us figure out, I know every business will be different, but helping people figure out how to target those key search word terms?
It's going to go back to what we talked about at the top of the show, and that is really understanding your buyer personas. I'm actually going through this right now myself. My main revenue these days comes from giving speeches.
Uh-huh.
And I asked my buyer personas, this is what I highly recommend that people do. You ask your buyer personas, this is the question you ask. If you were to go to Google to search to find a product or service like mine, what would be the search terms that you might use? And what I found is that a lot of people told me they would enter the phrase marketing speaker into Google. Marketing speaker. That's what I am. I'm a speaker, and I speak about marketing. And I had never focused on that search term before. Marketing speaker was not something that I had even thought about caring about until I did this research a couple of months ago. So what happened was I went into Google, and I did a search to find out where I was for the phrase marketing speaker, and basically it was terrible. I was like the number 70th listing for the phrase marketing speaker, and that's not going to drive people to me because people generally don't go to the fourth or fifth page. So I did a couple of things to help my ranking out, and now I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm just looking at it right now. I'm number 8. For the phrase marketing speaker on the front page of Google. So I can't overestimate the importance. It's just critically important that you don't make up the important search terms. You don't just say to yourself, oh, well, I'm in the pet grooming business, so everyone's going to go to Google and enter the phrase pet grooming.
Right.
Well, maybe they won't. Maybe they're going to enter the phrase poodle grooming or poodle clipping or, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. I don't even have a pet. I'm just making this up. But it's really important to understand directly from the mouths of your buyer personas what they would be entering if they were looking for a product or service like yours. And then you ought to think about creating some kind of content that will help your rankings for those particular phrases.
Really great tips. Thank you for sharing those. Now, David, so tell me this. Let's go back a couple of years. How did you create your worldwide rave? What's a little bit about your story?
Well, the thing that really got me to be popular was in 2006 when I created an ebook. But let me just step back a little bit. In 2002, I was fired from my nice, cushy vice president of marketing job at a big company called Thomson. And that was my wake-up call to, hey, maybe I should think about doing my own thing and starting my own business, which I did in 2002. And the first couple of years of my business, I was basically a consultant for hire. I was a marketing guy for hire. And in 2005, I wrote a book called Cashing with Content. And it wasn't very popular, and it was because I wasn't getting much notice on the web. Mm-hmm. I started a blog in 2005, mm-hmm. which seems pretty early today, but at the time I started it, I thought I was really late. It's really funny. Whenever you start, you think you're late. So, like, if people are listening in and they don't have a blog, or they're not on Twitter, or they haven't done any YouTube videos, guess what? You're not late, because there's always going to be people who are behind you who haven't done it either. Anyway, I started my blog in 2005, and it did okay. I had a few people who were following me, not very many, but a few. What I did in 2006 was I wrote an ebook, and the ebook is called The New Rules of PR. And an ebook, in my definition, it's just a PDF document. It's free. It's landscape orientation, which means it fits really nicely on the screen. It's well organized. It's nicely designed, and you put it out there for free, mm-hmm. as a way to provide valuable information to your buyer personas. And in my case, the buyer personas were public relations people and marketing people at companies. I put it out there on my blog, and immediately a bunch of very powerful bloggers, including Seth Godin, noticed it. And they blogged about it. And within the first month, 50,000 people had downloaded my ebook. Imagine that, 50,000 people in a month. And that then allowed me to get a book deal with Wiley for what became The New Rules of Marketing and PR, and that book was published in June of 2007, so approximately 2 years from the time that we're, ahead, before the time that we're doing this call right now. It was the hardcover book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, that came out in June 07 that really launched my notoriety, my speaking career and whatnot, because that's when people really noticed what I was doing, was when I had a Business Week bestseller. It's doing really well. But clearly, there's no question in my mind that the reason that I became reasonably well-known and allowed me to get a book deal and then allowed me to do what I wanted in terms of being on the speaking circuit was when I created a worldwide rave of my own. I created an ebook that lots and lots and lots of people have downloaded. And I think we're well over 300,000 downloads now. I think I've lost track. I don't know how many there are, but tons and tons of downloads. And I'm absolutely convinced that everyone can do that. I mean, it may not be an ebook. It might be a video or an ebook or a $1 million off coupon for a $7 million house. I mean, all kinds of examples of people who have been successful like this.
That sounds so easy. Well, first of all, congratulations. That's absolutely incredible. 50,000 people in the first month.
And I was not well known. I mean, I want to emphasize that. I was just a guy with a blog that not very many people were reading. I was not an A-list blogger. I was like a D-plus lister.
That's a really good tip. And I guess if you have done sort of the buyer persona research that you talked about at the beginning of the show, then writing an ebook for you, if you know your subject matter well, will really be a matter of just finding the time and making it look interesting and putting stuff in there that you know your buyer personas are interested in.
Absolutely. And I'll give you another example because I'm a big fan of ebooks. I mentioned earlier, I live in the Boston area. There's a dentist here in Boston. Her name is Dr. Helene Smith.
David, can you give us the example after our last
Absolutely.
Great. We're going to come back, and David's going to give us an example. This is really good stuff, you guys. I hope you're taking notes and really taking this information to heart. I believe David when he says that anyone can do this. I've seen other people do it. David just shared how he did it. 300,000 downloads in how many months, David? About?
Well, I think about a year. After about a year, we crossed the 300,000 mark.
That's 12 months. 300,000, not just hits to your website, but people who downloaded
actual
your
actual downloads. Yeah,
shared it with other people. Most small business owners are not getting that kind of activity at their site. So this is a really good reason to think about what David is saying. We're going to come back and pick his brain a little bit more about it. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to our final segment of Indie Business Radio with my guest, David Meerman Scott, author of Worldwide Rave. And David is really ponying up the goods today. Right now we're talking about ebooks. Who knew? David shared that in the first month after he put his ebook and made it available for download for free at his website, 50,000 people downloaded that ebook. I think that's incredible. David, you've got another story to share about a successful ebook publisher.
I will. Yeah, I'll share that one in just a moment, but I thought I'd add one more thing. Is I did another ebook in 2008, and it's been out for a year now. It's called The New Rules of Viral Marketing, and that one's been downloaded 600,000 times in 1 year, which is pretty remarkable. But yeah, I wanted to share an example, which I just love this example. Her name is Dr. Helene Smith. She's a dentist in Boston. So first of all, for all those of you who are listening who are entrepreneurs and business owners, Dr. Smith's a dentist. She's not a marketing person. She's not a writer. She's a dentist. And she had, for years, marketed her dental practice the way that everybody knows you're supposed to market a dental practice. She did Yellow Page ads. And if you go to the Yellow Page advertisements in Boston, for dentists, just the first page only goes to the letter D. So could you imagine if you were competing against all these other dentists and you've got, you know, you're trying to compete and there's just so many people out there. She was spending $2,000 per month on Yellow Page ads. And her business 3 years ago, her annual revenue was about $150,000. And she said to herself, there's got to be a better way. So about 3 years ago, she started a blog, and it's called the Healthy Smiles blog. And then about 2 years ago, she said, well, you know what? Maybe I should write an ebook too. She had learned about my ebook and some other people's ebooks and decided she was going to do one too. And so she thought about her buyer personas for a second. And, you know, obviously that's where you start. You don't write about yourself. You don't write about your products. But you write something that would be interesting for your buyer personas. And she had had a lot of discussions with her patients who had teenagers and learned that there was a lot of misinformation going around about oral health and sex, believe it or not. So she wrote an ebook called Healthy Mouth, Healthy Sex. And her ebook describes how good oral health affects your sex life. And when she put it out, immediately, she put it out on her blog and on her website, and immediately it started to get attention. It started to get downloads. She alerted all of her existing patients to it, so they were able to find out about it. Interestingly, she told the American Dental Association about it, and they freaked out because they're like, "Oh my God, you can't be talking about sex and dentistry in the same breath. What are you, crazy?" And this thing started to take off. Now remember, Dr. Smith is a dentist in Boston, so it's not like she can serve someone in California who happens to read the ebook, or someone in Singapore or London who happens to read the ebook, right? People have to be located in Boston. But people start to share it on their Facebook pages, and people start to email it from one to another. And imagine if someone says to you, or if someone said to me, "What dentist do you recommend?" That's a simple answer. I'm just going to email that ebook to someone and say, "It's Dr. Smith. She's a great dentist. You should check her out." Now, here's the punchline to the story. It's 2 years after she wrote the ebook, 3 years after she started her blog. Remember, she was paying $2,000 per month for Yellow Page ads, and her business was worth $150,000 in revenue 3 years ago. Today, her business is worth $1 million a year, and she stopped doing Yellow Page ads 18 months ago because she gets so much business from her website and her blog, people who are reading her ebook and people who are reading her blog, that she doesn't even need to advertise anymore. She's had to hire people to help her because she can't keep up with the work, so she has other dentists and dental hygienists within her practice now who are helping her keep up with all the demand. And again, I said this earlier, but I absolutely believe that everybody listening in can create something. Maybe it's an ebook, maybe it's a blog, maybe it's some photographs, maybe it's a YouTube video, but I do believe everybody can create, has the capability of creating something that has potential, that other people will spread it and share it, and that will drive business to you like Dr. Smith.
I think this is so key, and I want to emphasize too, David, thank you for sharing an example of someone whose job or business actually requires her to serve people in a physical way. And I think that's one thing I want my listeners to focus in on, and I want to pick it up with you too, David, because so many of my listeners manufacture products, which means, unlike people who may provide services, to some extent they usually, generally speaking, have more time to sit at a computer and do this kind of thing. You just gave an example of someone who's got to serve patients, you know, 5 or 8, 6 hours a day in order to make a living.
She's not in the marketing business.
Let's talk about that, because I think so many people say, "Oh, you know, I don't have time. I have to create these products. I have to be in the manufacturing area." But you're saying that, you know, there must be a way to schedule it out or make it an efficient way. And an ebook, right, Dave, doesn't have to be 50 pages.
No, and I can't remember exactly how big Dr. Smith is, but I think it's like 20 pages. But remember this: that's not 20 pages of dense text. And I encourage anybody to just, you know, do a Google search for Healthy Mouth, Healthy Sex. You'll find it, download it, check it out. It's not 20 pages of dense text. It's got images. It's got little pictures in it. It's got lots of white space. If it were just text, like if you were writing it in Microsoft Word, it's probably 5 pages of content. But it ends up being 20 pages in an ebook because of the way that it's designed.
Well, that makes it even, I hope you guys are listening, that totally makes it easier, because a lot of people think of ebook as what actually, David, most of them look like, which is 20 or 30 pages of text. They almost look like white papers.
Yeah, and that's not how I would define an ebook. I mean, in my mind, an ebook is something that people are really eager to read.
Mm-hmm.
That they're excited to download, that they're thrilled to share with their friends. They're like, "Oh my God, have you checked this out? It's really cool." And that's the sort of thing that people are eager to share one to another, but you've got to make it compelling. So the design is important. The way you write is important. You know, we're recording this in the middle of the summer, and I know some people might listen to it on a replay at some point in the future, but we're recording this in the middle of the summer. And right now, there's high school kids and college kids who are on vacation, who are looking for summer work. Perhaps you can find someone who's a marketing major at college, or perhaps a writing, a journalist, going to journalism school in between a couple of years. Perhaps you can pay them, you know, I don't know how much these people make, 10 or 20 bucks an hour, to come in and help you write it. And then you can get someone from one of the design schools to come in and help you design the ebook. This doesn't have to be expensive, and you don't have to do it by yourself. But you don't have to go and hire, you know, a really expensive marketing agency. It's going to charge you thousands and thousands of dollars. Go to Craigslist and put your request out there, and I'd be really surprised if you didn't come up with an excellent designer who can design an ebook for a couple hundred bucks, and an excellent writer who can help you to edit your ebook to get it to be really compelling, and for, you know, maybe a $500 investment, you can have as good an ebook as Dr. Smith did or as I did, and all of a sudden you can have tens of thousands of people downloading your information and wanting to do business with you.
Great tips, David. Let me ask you this. When we make something like that available in an ebook, or even at a blog, can you comment, David, on something that I've been reading a lot about lately? And that has to do with, well, actually it's two things. The power of actually giving that kind of content away and the pros and cons of it, David, and also if you could comment on what some people are experiencing, which is people ripping off their content and claiming it as their own and republishing it.
Have you heard that,
or do you know some people? I mean, it's almost like a double-edged sword. It's like, well, you've got to get the information out there. It's better than not having it out there at all. But
yeah, I'm a really big fan in losing control of your information and making it totally free with no registration requirement whatsoever.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of that. All of the examples that I've shared today, without any exceptions, every single one of them, have been examples of people who have put their information out there totally for free.
Mm-hmm.
They don't require an email address to get an ebook, for example. You don't require an email address to download your information. And
that's a really good point. Let's stop there for a second.
And I believe that's critically important because my research shows that you'll only get between 20 and 1 out of 50 people who would download your information if an email is required compared to if it isn't. What that means is if you have a white paper that you require an email address and you're getting 1,000 downloads a year, you could have had 50,000 downloads a year if there was no email requirement, because people are just very, very, very reluctant to give up their personal information in exchange for information. And ultimately, what we're talking about here is getting your information to be spread from one person to another so that you're reaching tens of thousands or even millions of people with your content. And you can't do that if you force people into some kind of registration process.
That's a really interesting point. I've landed on some pages where I could have downloaded an ebook, but I had to give them so much information.
It
took at least as long to do that as it did to download the book.
Well, and people are also frightened that they're going to end up on a spam list, or they're going to get called by a salesperson when they enter that information. And I think you have to have some faith that if people like your stuff, they're going to want to do business with you. I mean, look at Dr. Smith. You know, she didn't have to ask for someone's email address to get the report and then call them up and say, please, please, I want to be your dentist. Let me be your dentist. No. People read her ebook and said, well, shoot, this sounds like a really interesting person. I want her to be my dentist. And they called her up. I think that there's a fear that a lot of people have that unless they beat the hell out of somebody, they're not going to buy their product. You know, unless you go, if you're a real estate agent, unless you start knocking on doors and hitting up people at cocktail parties, no one's going to care about you. Well, that's just wrong. If you're providing valuable information for people that helps them to solve a problem, they're going to be eager to do business with you. They can't wait to pick up the phone to call you or to go into your store. So I'm not a fan of requiring registration. I've never done it myself. It's all of the success stories that are in my books are people who have never asked for any kind of registration requirement.
And you have found in your experience and the people that you work with that content being ripped off has not been an issue when you put this kind of information out there and make it so easily available?
Well, why is that a problem? I mean, you know, for the most part, 99% of the time when somebody references my stuff, they point to me, or they point to my blog, or they point to my Twitter feed or something, or they talk about one of my books. So for the 1% of the time that people take my information without giving me a credit, for those particular times, that's not a big deal for me in terms of the incredible benefit I have from 99 out of 100 people giving me proper credit when they talk about me and pointing people to my stuff. I just don't see it as a big problem. I think if your personality is such that these issues are going to keep you up at night, well, maybe this kind of marketing isn't for you. But if your personality is such that you love it when people talk about you and you're happy because your phone is ringing with people trying to do business with you, or people contacting you on your website to buy your product, well, then you got to put yourself out there. It's a lot like the dating game. If you sit at home all scared in your house and never go out, you're not going to have any dates. But if you suck it up and go to the bar and meet some people, or go to the club and meet some people, or go and join join some kind of cultural group to meet people, you're going to meet people and you're probably going to end up with some dates. But if you're paranoid, it ain't going to happen.
And you describe that as the choice to lose control, making the choice to lose control over content because you get so many benefits by doing that.
I believe very strongly that one of the most important things for success on the web and success with social media is that you have to lose control of your information, and you also have to lose control of your messages. You know, if you say, you know, if you believe that you're the number one company in the tri-state area, no one's going to say that. They're going to put your products and services and your company in their own words. So you have to lose control of your messages, and you have to lose control of your information. That's hard for some people, but it's required.
It is. It is hard for some people. And I would imagine that if it's difficult to do that, then it's probably difficult to delegate other things, which will cause your business not to be able to expand as efficiently or as quickly.
I think that's true.
So, David, we're getting to the end of our hour here. I can't believe it. You've provided some really great tips on writing ebooks. Tell us a little bit about where we can go to meet up with you. Are you going to be speaking anywhere? Of course, we want to know what link we should go to. Is there one place we can go to download all of your ebooks and check them out?
Yeah. So, I've got four places I'll mention. There's my website, which is my full name. So it's www.davidmiermanscott.com. My blog is www.webinknow.com. That's webinknow.com. And my Facebook and my Twitter ID are the same. It's DM Scott. My ebooks are available either on the blog or on the website, so you can find them that way. If you want the viral marketing one, just go to Google and type in the phrase viral marketing. It'll be on the first page. And yes, I speak all over the world. I just booked a gig in the Netherlands for October. I'm in Sydney and Melbourne, Australia in September, and I speak all over North America as well. My speaking gigs are on my website.
Wow, this is great. So you guys check out David at the websites he just mentioned, and also on Twitter at dmscott.com. There's a link there to one of his websites. He's got a great blog, and you can find out when he's going to be in your area, so you can check him out. And I think, of course, you want to get the information in his ebooks. And also, while you're there, I highly recommend, because I have both of these books and I've read them, I highly recommend Worldwide Rave and also The New Rules of Marketing and PR. These are incredible books. They will save you a lot of time, energy, and heartache if you put some of the tools and tips and suggestions that David has compiled in these books to work for your business. David, thank you so much for joining us on Indie Business Radio. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Donna Maria. It's been really fun.
I want you guys to know that I've got some great shows coming up for you. I have booked shows all the way out into August, and I want to tell you next week we are going to be right here on IndieBusinessRadio.com with Juliette Powell. She's a Huffington Post blogger and the author of How to Create Influence and Run a Successful Business with Social Networking. She's going to share her recommendations for leveraging technology to benefit our business and also serve our customers better. I hope you'll join us next Monday, July 13th, for that show. I'll see you then. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.